I'm Mary Brett, the resident doer of things. Thank you for being here. At the Doers of Things, we intend to share conversations with you that demystify the creative process and humanize the journey, which are just some fancy ways of saying we hope you get inspired to go out and do the things that bring you joy after hearing a fellow human share how and why they do what they do. We are all innate creators, curating our reality with every thought, word, and action. My guests all have different stories, backgrounds, and passions, but the one thing they hold in common is that they do the things that nurture the reality they want to live. They all just started somewhere and kept doing. Today, we're going to share a conversation had with music industry Jill of All Trades, Ellie Sanders. But first, I want to let you know that this is a value for value, pay what you wish, give what you can, free will investment model listening experience. That means you get to choose what you contribute in time, talent, or treasure to reflect the amount of value you get from listening to the Doers of Things. No donation is too small, and all donations help produce the show. Head over to thedoersofthings.com to learn more in the Donate tab. I spent a few months in Nashville in early 2023 helping out a friend and doing as many interviews as possible. I met Ellie Sanders at a parking lot show of B. Taylor's, who, side note, was one of my first interviews back in 2022 when this whole podcast journey started. But I immediately liked Ellie's vibe. I handed her my card and a few days later was on her back porch making a new friend and getting inspired by her story as a woman who's worn many hats in the music industry. Ellie is a doer of things for sure.
Okay. So.
We're off to a great start.
Here we go. Here we go.
So, Ellie, tell me a little bit about what you do now.
Okay, what I do right now is my boss, Jack Barton, and myself have a boutique radio services company called Jack Barton Entertainment. And what we do is we sit right in between the labels and the radio stations of the AAA format. So that's Adult Album Alternative. Most of our stations are listener-supported, non-commercial stations, kind of in the vibe of something like World Cafe, which is a AAA station. It's like a flagship station, WXPN in Philadelphia. And all the stations in that format, they report their spins to us every week, and we issue the charts based off of those spins, and the labels and the promoters come to us for access for that data. It's called tracking.
Okay.
So they know where their efforts need to be spent to move their artists on the radio. And then the stations can come to us and say, you know, we're really liking this song. Are we the only ones playing it? And they can say, no, we're not. Other people really like that song, too. And our charts come out every Tuesday. We're the only non-commercial charts in the industry.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everyone's coming to y'all to figure out what's happening in the non-commercial top 40 radio world.
Yeah, and it is where a lot of the songs that end up in top 40 come first.
Okay.
You know, we break a lot of artists in the format. We're very strong testing ground because of our stations. The way our stations operate is they're still community run. They're programmed by a person in that community who knows the neighbors, knows what local bands are popular, knows what you want. And that could be more Americana-leaning, or it could be more indie college kind of vibe, or even, you know, I mean, some of our stations play rap music, and that's what their listeners support them for. So
yeah.
It's a very broad testing ground for the music, a lot that does end up, you know, in those specialty genres or in top 40.
What is something that you think would be interesting for your average, you know, radio listener to know about how it works in the music that ends up in their ears?
I think that they, you know, they have more of a say in that than they might think. You know, a lot of listeners trust these stations for the music discovery aspects, but many of them do music meetings with the listeners where you can call the station or tweet the station or go on their social media and say, hey, I want to hear this artist. And a person at that station is going to be responsive to that. So you have a lot more power with that. And the more types of music that you share with the station that you want to hear, the more music that's like that music that you're going to end up hearing as well, because they know what you want to hear.
Well, that's pretty
what is the word I'm trying to say? Encouraging.
Yeah.
To know that you might have a little bit more of a say about what gets played, at least in these AAA stations. So when you say that, you're meaning basically, for the average listener, public radio stations.
Yeah.
Right.
These aren't, I think a lot of people have forgotten that there is still radio out there. I mean, not your listeners because of, you know, the nature of your community, but elsewhere, people think, well, all the conglomerates own the stations, and they do. You know, alternative radio, that's programmed by five people total. And as a result, those stations don't do as well as they should. And they don't highlight the music that's out there that is actually out there. And, you know, there are fantastic stations in our format, too, like KEXP in Seattle is a big one that is... There should be a station like that in every market.
Right.
Because they're breaking alternative bands. That's where they can go and live and evolve. But and just with all formats of people hearing the same thing in every city, don't think of radio as much as where the new music is.
Right. So you're in radio now, but that's not where you started.
No, I started in music journalism back at the turn of the century. And I played music all growing up, and I still play now. I'm very hobby, in a hobbyist way, but I wanted to be near music. It was my favorite thing about being alive, and I want to share that, you know, working it however I could. I got involved working at festivals and live events, and that eventually led to me touring with the band on their road crew. I was their touring merchandise manager and then an assistant stage manager and a drum tech and a key tech and all of the things and directing load-in and all that stuff and designing merchandise, which I still do, but I don't tour anymore. Too many other responsibilities now. And also, like, you know, I did that for over 10 years. And
yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Time for someone else. I can teach them how to do it. You know, yeah. Doesn't have to be me.
What's one of the, or a couple of the favorite out of all these hats that you wear? Which are the ones that you enjoy the most?
Building the show. Building the show will always, that'll always have my heart pulling up in the truck. Waking up in the truck at 11:55 and going to roll into the venue at noon and start it from blank and turn it into, you know, that place where people can go for 4 hours and forget about their day.
That is pretty cool. I mean, I've gotten to have a hand in some of that too, and it's really, I almost want to say magical, you know, to be able to walk into the spot where there's nothing happening. And then after you're done with your shift, like, this whole thing has been built, the stage, the lights, the screens, you know, and then the people come, and you, if you get to watch any of that, to just see the joy that they have, and that wouldn't be there if you and the handful of people weren't pushing the boxes and unloading the stuff and doing all of that.
Yeah, festivals, too, coming and build that city out of nothing.
What are some of your favorite fests?
I mean, I wouldn't be a true Nashvillian if I didn't say Bonnaroo, but Bonnaroo's a big one. I just love that festival. That festival keeps me young. You know, I can just run the circuit around from stage to stage and tent to tent, see all the things I've never heard of, and then leave there, like, knowing what the kids are listening to, knowing what people my age should be hearing, and seeing all the legacy artists, that, and, like, Telluride Bluegrass. And then the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival.
Okay.
That's major.
Those are three I've not been to, but always heard a lot about. I just, Texas has so many, and it's hard to you know, they're all happening at kind of around the same time. You know, it's hard. I should probably just, like, pick a new state one time and go to that.
Yeah, the problem with Jazz Fest is that once you go, that's what you do.
Okay.
You go.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
If you can.
Yeah. So where did you grow up? You're in Nashville now, but where was home for you growing up?
I'm from Northeast Ohio. So okay. Like Cleveland, Akron, Canton.
And then, you know, what is the kind of line that got you here to Nashville now?
Well, after I graduated from college in Ohio, I moved to New York City as a journalist, as the youngest dinosaur, right at the end of print media at the turn of the century. And was really just open to doing anything, which was how I ended up there in the first place. I was going to New York after I graduated to see concerts, a couple concerts by the band Phish. And I called my buddy, who was a musician, and I was like, hey, man, are you going to go to Phish? I'm going to come into town. I'd love to see you. Let's hang out. And I was like, and if you know of any jobs, let me know. And he was like, oh, man, that's so rad. You're moving to New York? That's so great. I have a room opening up in my apartment. It's $5.50 a month. It's in a great location, and I'm never home.
$5.50 a month in New York?
In Brooklyn.
That is ridiculous.
Right. So I was like, great, here we go.
Yeah.
So I moved to New York. I got ended up getting and talking my way into an internship at a music magazine. I wrote an essay for it, and I got in there, and the...
What's the essay about?
It was about your favorite musical moment.
Okay.
And I just had mine. It's, again, this is a band Phish, and they had called it a quits. And they were, like, playing their last shows ever in the Northern Kingdom of Vermont. And it was this festival called Coventry. And they'd had, like, the most rain in decades leading up to the festival. And when the cars started to pull in, they realized no more cars were going to be able to come in. And the people needed to, when we got in the traffic line, we got in there at night, woke up in the morning, and we had it moved. And they came on the radio, the bass player from the band came on the radio, and he was crying. And he was telling people they needed to turn around. And we were like, nope, absolutely not. And the Vermont's amazing, and the state troopers came by, and they were like, look, if you could just get your car off the road, you can park it here. So I grabbed a tarp and a Newcastle and some peanut butter and pita bread and, like, a pocket full of cash, and we started hiking, and we walked in, like, 30 miles.
30 miles?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, you know, all those things happen, those magnetic things. You, like, run into your friends, and they have this, and then, you know, a stranger gives you that, and... that kind of stuff, and that had just happened. That was really fresh, and so I wrote about how it wasn't any of the songs that they played or anything like that, but the experience of I'll walk to this.
Yeah,
like, try me.
Yeah,
you know, this is the power of this for me. And I'll never forget this guy. His name's Jonathan Schwartz, and he's in radio also. He was the marketing director. And he was like, listen, you're overqualified. And I was like, listen, man, don't you want someone you don't have to babysit?
Good point.
And he was like, okay, good point. And I worked there for a couple months, and then he set me up with what ended up being my first job, was as a personal assistant for another artist. And then it just went from there. And it was just became, you know, the thing with artists is they kind of, you know, they pull their ideas out of the air. And some of them are viable and some of them aren't, but they need to be able to try each one and find that out. And what they don't have is that, like, logic brain of the tasks of the organization of the business of the art. And so I found myself freelancing and picking up different kinds of clients in and around music who needed those operations. And then... I ended up leaving the city, and then I've kind of fell out of the whole thing for a while, and then a buddy of mine who's in a band, his band was playing, I was tending bar, and he came around the corner, they were playing that night at the House of Blues in Cleveland, and he came into the bar for like the third year in a row, and I was still there, and he was like, Ellie girl, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm touching other people's ketchup, man. And he's like, well, I have a job opening up on the road, you want it? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's go. So that's how I ended up with the band, and eventually just visiting Nashville became a place where other, like, colleagues of mine from New York had come, and we just loved it immediately. And after not living anywhere for a long time, I felt the urge to settle somewhere, to
right.
find somewhere to be, and I bought my house in 20 minutes, and... I was like, this is fine. We closed on it. They had to send a notary to the road to close with me at a venue in, you know, Concord, New Hampshire or something.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even see the house again until we showed up with our things in January. And then we moved in, and then by March we were all laid off because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
And we had somewhere to be.
You hadn't even mentioned that when we were talking a little bit before, how you got this wonderful spot, how it proved to be a safety net.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you had said how there was a big pull inside of you to say, hey, I need to have somewhere to put some roots down, even if it's not, you know, all the way down firm, but like just like a landing pad.
Needed something.
And you were just ready for it.
Yeah.
And then that happens.
I've never really been a big on like a plan per se. I'm much bigger on being prepared.
Yeah.
And following my gut at all times.
Yeah.
And my intuition. I believe that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be all the time. And I live that way. No, like with that understanding, whether things are good or bad, and all in between, why is the thing happening? And, you know, also knowing that things aren't forever.
Right.
When things are good or bad. And always have to go with it.
Have you always been that way, or is that something that you grew into?
I think so. I feel like I read a lot of, I don't know, more hippie, spiritual, influential Buddhism books when I was, you know, 14 and 15 okay. and 16.
How did those books fall into your lap?
They came to me like everything else, you know, the right people
yeah.
who were kind of, you know, that I felt really close to with the match of my energy and like, hey, let's, you know, be mindful. Let's learn how to be mindful of stuff
yeah.
and slow down and, you know, feel it out and trust yourself. And know that if you keep doing that, you know, things are going to happen, and that's what's going to happen, basically.
Yeah. What was life growing up like for you in the home? What was there music around? Was it a faith-based home?
There was definitely music around. My dad was a big musical influence on me. My mom liked pop music, and I grew up with all that great 80s pop music, which was fine, and my dad raised me on like oldies of 50s music and
nice
and things like that, you know, the Kingston Trio and
Roy
Orbison and the first CDs that came into our home were like the Traveling Wilburys and Dire Straits and
cool
New Kids on the Block for me, and I was really into like hair metal too. I like loved Motley Crue and I loved Guns N' Roses and all that stuff. I still do.
Kingston Trio to Motley Crue.
I just loved
quite
it all. Like,
bookends,
I loved it
yeah.
all. My dad had a banjo, and I would try and play it with my little baby fingers, and it was terrible. And I was fascinated by it, and we listened to classical music as well. It's just there's not music that's outside of my scope of appreciation, basically.
Yeah. And then what about faith? What about church? Were y'all church-going people? When you were reading these kinds of things as a teenager, did that make them, you know, concerned at all, or
no,
were they excited for you?
Yeah, see, I'm Jewish.
Okay.
And my dad grew up, like, Methodist or some, not Jewish, and he converted when he married my mom. And we lived in a suburb halfway between, like, Akron and Canton, Ohio. And there's small Jewish communities in both of those, and a larger one in Cleveland. But I grew up literally the only Jew in any school that I ever attended until I went to college.
Oh, wow.
And I had close friends who were the preacher's daughters. I dated the preacher's son more than once. I've been to all the churches. And I went to Sunday school Jewish, and we've had a year of our Sunday school where every Sunday we went to a different church in our community to check it out. Because you can't lead in your community if you don't know your neighbors.
Right.
And it was never, my parents were always like, look, you know, this is your heritage or your tradition, your culture, but whatever you decide is, you know, it's up to you. So they never interfered or bothered much with however that was. It was always like, don't be a bad person.
Yeah.
Don't do bad things and don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, we're all here together.
That's pretty freeing and nice. you know, to have parents that let you develop that relationship with a higher power on your own, what called to you, instead of trying to force you to believe what they might have believed.
Yeah, my mom would always say, you know, I'll hope you'll choose to be Jewish. I hope you'll choose to keep the faith going with that. But it wasn't a pressure situation or a fear-based, you know, indoctrination for as it can be.
Right. So to get back to the writing, were you a young writer? Did you write songs, short stories, poems?
You know, I've never been a great fiction writer. I'm not a creative mind like that. But I would write like a book about sharks, or like a book about, I guess, UFOs, which, you know, can be fiction or nonfiction depending on your belief in it. But
what do you believe?
A lot more. Oh, for sure.
Aliens are
not
out there.
Alone. Yeah, yeah. You know. But it was always the journalism, and I loved to travel, and I would always write about my travels when I was traveling as a teenager and things like that, and I would end up getting like published in my like little local paper and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And they'd be like, oh, you're going to Costa Rica with the school. We'd love to, you know, hear about it, you know, and stuff like that. So it led to that. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I got to school, and I ended up in journalism. That seemed to be my path ultimately, but it was a very strange time for it because it was also just with the switch to digital. That was like kind of one thing, but I went to a giant school, and when I got there, I really wanted to go into broadcast journalism.
Okay.
And they had just folded the broadcasting program. It didn't exist. They don't have a radio station. They have a radio station, but it's completely NPR, and I think it's a jazz station. It's not even like proper college radio.
Okay.
They had a club radio station in the student union that only broadcasts to the dorms. And I loved radio, and I didn't end up pursuing it then. And my senior year, I think I'm the last class of students at The Ohio State University that graduated with journalism degrees from the journalism school.
Okay.
From the School of Journalism. Now it's rolled into communications. They dissolved our program. They fired my advisor. And how it really feels and felt at the time and still feels is it's not in the best interest of a corporation to train people how to ask questions.
Right.
So, you know, that was a major thing. And you're sitting in these journalism classes and they teach you how the news works. And the day that I decided that I was absolutely going to focus on music and leave behind, like, you know, the search for truth or whatever, when you learn about the industry, they teach you, like, the things that go above the fold is what they call it on the newspaper, the top stories. It's if it bleeds, it leads.
Okay.
And I'm not going to live like that.
Right.
I'm not going to sell fear to people as my job.
Right.
Masquerading as information.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's media outlets that do real journalism, you know, who are out there trying to find the actual true story, but it's kind of the same thing like with corporate newspapers and corporate media and corporate radio. One person says what we're going to talk about today or what you're going to hear.
Yeah.
And it didn't really seem like that was like a good idea for me.
You definitely have a too beautiful of a spirit to be somebody that was gonna work towards that.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know, like, I'm glad that you, whatever it took you to be like, no, I'm gonna take a left. What was that moment for you? Was that hard for you, or was it just a nice light bulb moment? And then like, oh, well, then we're just gonna take a left, and that's what we're gonna do.
I'm very like, it takes me a while to get to the line. I want to see the whole area.
Yeah.
But once we're over that line, it's done. Door shut.
Yeah.
And I don't worry about it.
Yeah. Over the line, Smokey.
Yeah.
A little Big Lebowski reference. The last interview we did, I talked with Charlie Zalian, who writes for the Nashville Scene and Rolling Stone and Bandcamp, and he was talking about how in the 90s a college student wrote a review about how bad the Big Lebowski was. That it was a terrible movie. And he was saying that, you know, it would be a good project to come up with all of the people that gave reviews to things that said how bad they were, and they turned out to be so amazing, you know? So you'd have to, like, interview, like, Michael Jordan's high school basketball coaches, you know, and people like that. They just got it totally wrong. But yeah, I should probably not always try to bring up the Lebowski and everything, but it's just such a good one.
It's such a good one. I think it's going to turn 30 this summer.
There has to be some Big Lebowski parties somewhere.
Yeah, I saw that it was going to be in the theater, like, you know, a day or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then everyone would have you dress up.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I produce and perform in burlesque shows as well, and I've always wanted to do a Big Lebowski-themed show. And I'm sure somebody out there has. But there's a couple other ones where, you know, a themed show around certain works of art, either albums or music and movies, and that's one of them. you know, anyway, let's do a total sidebar. I don't even remember where we were now. Oh, I was thanking you for the work that you, over the line, there we are, the yep. work you had
shut
to
the
do
door.
To shut that door and honor, you know, honor the collective, you know, and what's going to help inspire them and put a smile on their face instead of something that's going to put more weight on their hearts.
It's hard enough.
Yeah.
It's hard enough. Like, why?
Right.
You know?
I am always floored by how many people are willing to do that for the sake of a paycheck or fame or recognition or whatever, that you're willing to not only, like, do that to your fellow human beings, but daily interact with that.
It's absolutely fascinating. It's I worked on the road for a long time with a band in the Grateful Dead world, and I've met and I'm not gonna give his name any more air than this, but you know, a large figure at Fox News who's a giant deadhead.
So how is it that you're able to...
It's incongruent. Yeah. I don't
yeah.
get it.
Yeah.
Know? And it's, you know, these people are, they're playing roles. I think some of them are like, you know, sociopaths. For sure.
You have to be.
You have to be. And some of them are playing roles, and there's got to be some kind of mix of both. I mean, to be so, like, apathetic towards humanity.
Right.
To play that role is just, I mean, it's outside of the realm of my comprehension.
Yeah. I try not to think about it too much. I stopped watching television in 2007. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, any good mental health thing that I have going on for me has to do with the fact that I'm not inundated by commercials nor the fear porn of news,
right.
You know, or the thing that tells you, you know that this holiday is coming up that you have to buy this stuff for because here's all of the programming and the ads and stuff that are gearing you towards that. So, you know, when Christmas comes around, I'm always just like, it's just another day over here in my world.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I do like to, you know, be with my loved ones and things like that, but I don't have that pressure.
It becomes a choice.
Yeah.
More than an obligation.
Right.
Because it's, again, it's hard enough. Like, the added pressure of it, of the consumer holidays can be so weighty. And if you are struggling with that, the best thing to do, give it a year.
Yeah.
Take a year off.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't come back. If that's what you need, you know. But it's okay, you know.
Sometimes we just need a little bit of distance from something.
Your family will understand.
Yeah, to realize that that wasn't serving us, really. You know, and there's other things that we could choose to do with our thoughts, words, and actions on those times of the year. So you said that you like to do a lot of traveling. What are some of the favorite places that you've been to?
I love the entirety of Mexico.
Okay.
I love the whole Mexico. All of it. I have not been, of course, in the parts that are troubled. But the Mexicans that I've met and become friends with over the years are my favorite people on this planet. It's the friendliest place. It's beautiful. The food's amazing. The people are incredible. Like, I would like to come back as a Mexican. Like, let's go.
Do you speak Spanish?
A little bit. Enough to make friends and get meals and stuff.
Yeah.
And get around. This country is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so big, and it's so beautiful. Like, our best state is Vermont, in my opinion.
Okay.
I love it the most. It's my favorite place. It's a place with no billboards.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's my people. It's women who don't wear makeup. And,
yeah.
You know, they're hardy and stuff. I'd live up there right now, but it's too cold for me. I love the desert of California. I love California from top to bottom. I love the Pacific Northwest, Colorado. Unbelievable stuff out there. And I appreciate, you know, driving Texas across on the diagonal, not on the 10. But, you know, maybe that road up to, like, Cortez, New Mexico, where you just cross it. It's, like, speed limit's, you know, 80, but it's, like, farm roads, and then you just slow down every once in a while and roll into a town. And the thing I really love about the West, too, that it just, like, blew my mind the first time I drove out there by myself was, like, that you can see the entire train at once. The whole thing.
Yeah.
Moving. Train. You know, that's just, like, the space. You know, I think people don't realize how big it actually is out there in Montana. And,
oh, so yeah, it is a bigger sky. I don't know what's going on, but it does seem like a bigger, closer sky.
There's nobody there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it, but it does seem, it's just unbelievable.
Have you ever gotten to go to Alaska?
I have.
Where have you been?
I went with the band in 2011. We played in Anchorage. We had a day off and then a gig in Anchorage. And we played at the 49th State Brewing Company up by Denali. It was in Healy. And we played at the Blue Loon in Fairbanks.
Okay.
That's it, right? The one that's...
Fairbanks is up there. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been that far north. I went a little north of Denali when I was in there 2016, hitchhiking around after I worked for the Boy Scouts. And I got... I don't know, maybe like 100 miles north of Denali. And then I've been all the way down to Homer. And then also this last summer I spent it on the island, which is of Kodiak, which is just off the tip of Homer. We should definitely try to check out Salmon Fest one year.
I mean, it's my dream to go back. I thought Alaska was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
It was totally covered in bears. In my experience, I got to do the trip in the park and ride the school buses around Denali and be covered in bears. And it was August, so it was already autumn on the tundra, and it was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was spectacular. I highly recommend. Big fan. I want to drive there across Canada.
That would be cool. I have a dream of... So I live in a bus. It needs a little bit of under-the-hood TLC. To get it to say that I could take this trip, but I would like to go out west and then put it on a ferry and take the ferry over to the island and then another ferry to get it to mainland, play Salmon Fest, you know, and then, like, do some more up there just to save, because it's another, like, 1,500 miles or 2,000 miles or so to get through Canada. So just to try to save them. And I think it'd be fun to ride the ferry for a few days.
I always take, if there's the ferry is an option, I'm on it.
Yeah. You can, Bellingham, Washington, get on a ferry.
It's a rad town.
And go to, either way, I think you can get it to where you can get it to the mainland or you can take it to the island. I think mainland might be like a 6-day thing and the island's like a 3-day thing, I think. But yeah, that's a dream trip.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Oh man, I had a thing in my head and then it just zoomed away as I was seeing myself on this trip. Oh, fish. How did you find yourself in the fish world?
In the fish world? Okay, so...
A Fish is a jam band, just in case anyone's unfamiliar.
It's from the great state of Vermont. And, I was like a little deadhead when I was a small person. Somebody brought me a Grateful Dead tape or something and I was probably... You know, 11 or 12.
Ooh.
And 13. And when I was 14, my buddy's big brother was like, hey, man, like, we're going to go to Chicago to go see the Dead at Soldier Field, and you should come with us. So I, like, march up to my mom, and I'm like, you know, I want to go see the Grateful Dead at Soldier Field. And she was like, yeah, no. You know, you're 14. I might have been 15. No, it was 95. Yeah, I was 14. And she was like, look, I just wouldn't be any kind of mother if I let you go to Chicago, you know, with these dudes to see the Grateful Dead and you're 14. But, you know, they tour every year and you can go next year. And I was like, okay, cool. And anybody who is familiar with the Grateful Dead history knows that that was their last show. Jerry died like 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And I was like,
have you ever forgiven your mom?
I was like, you know, I missed it. I was like, I'm going to be an angry teen now. And I wouldn't do any other, like, side project Dead. I wouldn't go see, like, Phil and Friends or Rat Dog for years. I wouldn't go see it. And I wouldn't go see Fish. I was aware of them, and they were coming around. And my friends were into other stuff. And nobody really take me. It would have been me taking them, you know, like, hey, let's go see this band. I got their tape, you know. But I thought they were, and I was wrong, but I thought they were, like, a I was like, I missed it. You know, I missed it. I'm all, moving on.
Yeah.
And I ended up, a couple years later, I made this friend at a job, and he was into it. And he was like, Ellie girl, I want to go to the, I want to go to New York City to see Fish at New Year's. I can get us tickets for the 30th, but I have to buy 2 tickets. You should come with me. And by this time, I was 17, and I was like, okay, okay, sure. You know, so went home, I'm like, Mom, I'm going to go to New York. And she was like, okay, whatever, you know, you drive.
Yeah.
You know, and she let me do it, and we had to call the ticket broker on the phone and give, like, a credit card number, and they came in the mail that morning, and we drove to New York, and we went. And I'm standing there, and we had floor seats.
Oh.
And I'm standing there watching this band. And the first song was, like, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And the second song was, like, kind of a heavy metal, like, song of theirs. And I was like, okay, did I just drive to New York? This is fine, but it's a little weird. And I don't know if I can do, like, 3 more hours of this. And then we got into, like, song 4 or 5 or whatever. And I found myself with my mouth open, just staring at it. Like, I never heard anything like it, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Yeah.
Totally sober. Like, no weed, nothing. I knew, and I stayed that way on purpose because we were staying in New Jersey. None of us had ever been in the city before, and I knew somebody was going to have to get us back to New Jersey. And I was like, elected myself as that person. And that was it. I was just like, oh my God, like, the music's my favorite thing, and this is the best thing I've ever seen. It's awesome. Like, how is this like this, you know? And so the next summer, they came through, and I picked up a show here and there. I was traveling that next summer on my first Great American Road Trip, where we did, like, both oceans and both borders.
Wow, was this with a family or with a group of friends?
No, with my friend Jen and some boyfriend at the time and our good friend Dan. We broke Dan loose on that trip, but we hit the road for a month back when gas was, you know, like 90 cents. And
yeah.
You could pull over and just fall out of the car on the ground and sleep in someone's field and nobody cared. And we did that, and we caught fish a couple times along the way, and I was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
It's different every time.
Yeah.
These guys are smart.
Yeah. You
know? So I kept up with it. Like, I'd be a lot farther along with my life financially if I wouldn't do that.
How many shows have you been to? Have you kept track?
I'd have to check my stats, but it's probably in, like, 160 or so.
Wow. Yeah. My cousin's a big Panic fan. She's been to over, like, 125 sets. I think she's at 27 now after the 2 we did at New Year's Eve together. And it's just amazing to see people that have such a love, you know, for anything at all, you know. But when they do it to the extent of, you know, putting their resources to that, dedicating their calendar to it. It really is a testament to how powerful music can be for people.
And it's my best relationships. It's my closest friends,
yeah,
you know, that I have in my life. We share that. It's the way we can get together and see each other. It's an excuse to travel and see everywhere and go to different venues and camp here and go there and cities and get out in the world and meet new people. And there's always that kind of, I won't plan a whole, you know, I won't look at a tour and be like, oh, I'm going to buy all these tickets. I know I'm going to end up with the ones that I'm supposed to go to.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's great. Let's do it.
Can you even come close to saying which one was your favorite?
Oh, yeah. Big Cypress.
Oh, right.
They did the New Year's 1999-2000 at the Big Cypress Seminole Indian Reservation.
And what made that stand out?
It was not only the shows, they did a day of regular fest, you know, they did show the day before, and then the New Year's, they played a day set, and then they came out right before midnight and played until sunrise.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was cool, but it was the whole, like, if you didn't live through Y2K, it was this not knowing whether or not our society was going to collapse, yeah, and which time zone it was going to collapse in, which I thought was hilarious. At the stroke of midnight, when the computers wouldn't be able to figure out what year it was. And there was this whole, like, well, you know what? If the world ends, like, here we are.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a really palpable energy to be in the midst of.
It's the most fun I've ever had, and it was the perfect time, too. It was, like, 18.
Oh, nice.
This thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, 5 stars. 10 out of 10.
Are there any other jam bands that you go to, or are you just exclusively Phish?
I'm pretty exclusive. I'll go to anything. But I've also been I've been around that scene for a very long time, and I'm picky. And I know there are a lot of very nice people in many of those bands, and I love that they're making people happy with their music.
Yeah.
You know, and around here, yeah, Panic's the big deal.
Yeah. I had never been, and it's funny because she's a big fan, and then she's on my mom's side, and on my dad's side, I have a cousin who's a really big Panic fan, too. Not gone to any of the amount of shows that she has, but I just think that it's funny that on either side of my family, I had these two really big Panic fans, and I enjoyed it. I would go to another one, but I did just go to this first Goose show, and I think I would like to go to more of those over going to more Panic shows.
The thing I've found with Goose, I tried the Goose. Oh God, I'm gonna get a lot of heat for this, but man, if I wanted to listen to Phish, I would listen to Phish, and if I wanted to listen to Sound Tribe Sector 9, I would listen to that, or Lotus, or The Dead. Or there's nothing there for me that's... I can hear Humphreys McGee, and I can hear every other jam band that's come before them in their music. And that's fun.
Yeah.
All those bands are good.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I like it, because it's just a hodgepodge of all the things that are working in these other
and
bands.
They're very, very nice, and yeah, they're great players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that I love about going to any jam show is just, like, these people can play.
Yeah.
You know, and they play for a long time, you know, so you can go to a show and it's an hour, maybe an hour and a half, you know, not jam bands, like a regular concert, but you go to one of these things and it's a whole experience, you know, you gotta have the stamina to even keep up with them, and you're not even playing. Just imagine how these people feel, like, especially the drummers and stuff like that. I don't think they get as much credit because everyone's face is melting off from the shredding of guitars and things,
right,
but the rhythm section is just down there, just holding it down.
Yeah.
And that's a full body exercise, you know? You can't, like, wipe the sweat from your brow to... You just got to keep going, you know? So I'm just forever amazed by just the athleticism.
Yeah.
You know, and the energy output that they're giving for so long. And not every concert ticket do you get your money's worth like that.
No, and it's the whole, like, I mean, the thing that the Dead, the groundwork that they laid for all the bands that came behind them to play 2 set shows.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, as a fan, you're absolutely going to get your money's worth. It is worth it for you to travel and, you know, spend the night out and do that. You're not getting 90 minutes. You're going to get 90 minutes twice.
Right. And it comes with a community. You know, like, yeah, there's, you know, people that like, everyone at that show that you're going to, whoever it is, everybody likes that show. But there's not there's not a community or an intent to maybe meet new people at the show and make lifelong friends at the show and maybe get there early and hang out in the parking lot or stay later or whatever. I mean, like, that doesn't happen at other shows, but it happens at every jam band show.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. That's just beautiful.
It is. It's super cool.
And it makes me almost want to cry. I get really sensitive about talking about things sometimes, you know, just knowing how powerful it is to people. Like, there are some people that this is their lifeline, you know. This is what holds them together when they're being inundated by what we're talking about of the mainstream news and all of that. And these are the outlets that allow them to know that, like, there are still good people in the world. There are still good things happening. And here's 3.5 to 4 or whatever hours that you can just not worry about that and to just be in the energy of people who are vibrating at the same frequency as you are, you know? And there's something really powerful in that and special about that, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's elevated.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can go there down and be elevated by it.
Right, totally.
You don't have to get up to go. You can go and be
wherever you're
lift
at.
It up.
Yeah, and let it lift you. I want to circle back on the writing. So I know that you're now, you know, not working for a publication that is dedicated on writing, but you do get to write some reviews here and there. I've gotten to read some on your website. Do you see yourself trying to get back into more regular writing or to make your own blog or put a book together?
I've got books.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know when. Probably 2 or 3. I got to write, the company, my Jack Barton Entertainment, we spun off from an old company called FMQB, Friday Morning Quarterback, and it opened in the 50s, and the owner, it's a husband and wife ownership, and they used to do the charts for different formats, and my boss ran AAA for them, and when they retired, and then passed away almost immediately, because when you work until you're like 90, that's what happens.
Right.
They gave us the assets, and we rebranded right at the end of 2019. But before that, they published a magazine for Radio Trade every other month, like an actual paper magazine.
Okay.
With artist interviews in it, and industry people and things like that. And my boss knew I had a background in that, and he started to give me artist interviews, and I got to write like 40 or 50 different, interview all sorts of Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, nice.
You know, or Jason Isbell and Brandi Carlile More Than Once, and, you know, all these fantastic people. The last one I did was a Texan, Charlie Crockett. He was last interview. Yeah. Love him. And now we don't do the interviews anymore, but we do an Artist of the Week feature on our website, which is what you saw, where we want to highlight bands that are bringing their music to radio who need it, who might need it more than... We do some more legacy. Sometimes we'll do, like, a legacy artist. But if you're already too big, you don't need us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of writing where it's more profile than critical.
Okay.
I always kind of shied away from doing the more critical work because who am I? Why does my opinion matter? Do you like it?
Yeah.
Then cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to... Why am I going to, like, crap on it for you or puff it up if it's not to your taste. But I'll tell you about it. I'll let you know that it exists.
Yeah.
And you can decide whether, you know, or not you care for it. So going forward, I have those tapes from the magazine of all of these interviews with these artists that have never been read or seen. They're not online anywhere. It's like they don't exist in the public.
Yeah.
So that would be my first, like, kind of low-hanging fruit book project, as if there are low-hanging fruit book projects. There aren't. But that one I'd like to see in record stores.
Yeah.
You know? And then I have, like, one in mind that has to do with kind of, you know, following premonitions, following your gut.
Oh, let's get into that.
Just, it's little things, but it's stuff that, you know, set the course for whatever came next. You know, like, you know, that voice in your head, when that voice, and you know it because it's not your voice.
Yeah.
And it's, if you ever hear it, you don't forget it. And it ends up being, for me, it was just little things throughout my life. Like, it's small, like being in fifth grade and having a feeling, being told that if I put my hand in the back of the desk, I would find a note from a boy, and I did.
Oh.
You know, and then he and I had dated at, you know, middle school and stuff yeah. like that. And we were the it couple and all this stuff, but that unfolded over years. Or I knew something was going to happen in the month leading up to 9/11.
Okay.
One of my best friends and I were both feeling this. I went to him and I was like, something's wrong. I'm like, I had this vivid dream, something's wrong. And he was like, Ellie girl, I know. The animals are freaking out. He's like, something's weird. Something's up. And then the last one was like, I was working at a summer camp. And I was by myself. And I was like walking in the woods. And a feeling washed over me. And a voice said someone's name to me. And he was somebody that I was working with at the camp who I didn't even think about. And I ended up that night seated next to him at dinner. And then he was the only one who wanted to go out and go off camp later, and we got to the bar together, and it was couples night. And we ended up dating, and it didn't work out, and that was, you know, totally fine, but he introduced me to the people that I ended up touring with for over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And who I've had a relationship with for over 20 years is how I've met almost everyone I know in my life. Since I met him, almost everything that's happened to me professionally and personally happened to me because that voice said his name.
Wow.
And it's just like weird stuff, you know, yeah. Like that's bizarre. Like you know, I thought at the time, like, oh, I want to marry this guy. And that wouldn't have worked out. You know, that would have been terrible. And, he's still in my life actually, but you know, it's all good. Totally cool. But everything that's happened to me has happened since then, like, because of that.
Right.
And I knew, it was like a feeling, like, washed over me, like, from head to toe, like a wave.
What do you do to amplify that voice? What do you do to quiet the voice that says, hey, that's crazy, don't listen to that? What, you know
I
what I mean?
I don't have that voice.
Okay. That's good.
I don't know that one. Maybe I should. I don't have
it. No, like, don't listen to
angel?
That one.
I don't know.
I wouldn't listen to that one. That's the whole point, you know.
It's the thing that I do is I try and stay really grounded, and I try and stay really connected to moments, to the earth itself, to dirt, to outside, to slowing down, to checking in with myself. You know, sometimes I'll go way too long without doing 10 minutes of meditation even.
Yeah.
You know, or get caught up in, you know, we get caught up in our lives and what are we having for dinner and what's going on at work and all this stuff, and it's super hard. And give yourself a break, you know, walk around and check it out. Even something as simple as like taking a shower.
Yeah.
You know, can change your whole day, change your mind, change your mood, like do, like be just cleansing in all the ways. And so I try, and it doesn't have to be a big thing, anything. You know, try and find that mindfulness and, like, mindful walking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm walking on the earth. Each one of these steps is, you know, and working with the earth and the vibration of all the things, connecting me to the core of everything that's around me, or, you know, the light, the universe, and all of that stuff, and just trusting it, and trusting myself if I need to take a break or if I need to, maybe not. You know, maybe I need to sit down and be busy.
Yeah.
And that will, like, clear things out in a different way. And then getting back to journaling, I can't recommend that enough for people who have any swirling thought of any
right.
kind. Once you get that stuff out of your hand, it's out of your head, and then you're open again to receiving
new things.
New things.
Yeah. Do you have any non-negotiable daily practice of any kind? Where it's like, I do this every day, no matter what, no matter how I'm feeling, no matter where I'm at. This is something that I do.
No.
Well, that's good to know that we can have a little leeway.
No. If I don't want to do it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could have better all of the time habits, sure, but also, like, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
It's almost, it's like the, it's like prohibition almost. Like, I'm prohibited from slipping off of this mandatory thing. I yeah. can't do that.
Yeah.
If I prohibit it all the way, it's going to come back, and then it's going to be even harder.
Yeah.
So I don't set that kind of, I don't have that kind of disciplinary system set in, or my non-negotiables. I mean, they're, if anything, it's stuff like, have to be able to brush my teeth today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's basic stuff.
Yeah. Which, you know, can totally fall off when we're busy or maybe not in a good mood or whatever. We just want to say, oh, just forget about it. You know, not a big deal. But something like that can totally just change your moment, too.
Flossing. That's huge. If you get in trouble with yourself, go floss. If you got to figure some stuff out, recommend.
Are you a string on the hands, or you got the little pick?
I do both.
You got the, okay.
Yeah. Mostly just the pick, but if I really got to get in there, you know, and write myself, write the ship, I go with Depot.
Well, this kind of led into, I think, one of the last questions I was going to ask is that, you know, it sounds from a bit of our conversations that we had earlier, we didn't get into it much, here, that you're kind of the person picking up all the slack in whatever project you're a part of and, like, doing all the different things, doing many things.
Do all the things.
What do you do to take care of yourself? What do you do all the things for yourself? Or who do you turn to when you need someone to help with your things?
Man, you know what I do is I watch, like, trashiest TV they have.
Oh,
I watch
that's
that
juicy.
Trash.
Tell me what, like, you watch.
Whatever those housewives are doing and all their hijinks, that stuff is so bizarre and I can't look away from it. But, like, if to blank out entirely,
yeah.
I'm not really, like, a movie watcher. And I listen to music all day, every day, and it's part of my job, too, and that's my escape and also my work. I won't necessarily turn into that, but I read a lot, too, but sometimes I'm just like, I gotta put on that trash.
Yeah.
I know it's low vibration, but you know what? That's exactly what I need. I need low to no vibrations.
Yeah. I think if you go in knowing that, you have an awareness of what you're consenting to, then it kind of changes it. It kind of changes what it does to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you're doing it for that purpose when other people are doing it thinking they're being entertained, but they're really being sucked low. You're doing it as just like a palate cleanser.
Totally. You can shut my brain. It's the only thing. Just absolutely can go blank. It's awesome. I'm so grateful to those women and their drama. I just, like, can't. Sometimes it's just, there's nothing like it. It's like, wow, what in the hell? How does this happen? Like, how is this on earth that these people exist and they're pretty? You know, and they have pretty stuff, and it's very fascinating to watch. And they have all the same problems as everybody else. It's not like, you know, we're getting away with anything, but it's so shiny.
What do you like to read, and who are your favorite authors?
Trash.
Okay.
Yeah, I read a lot of, you know, I was in my literature phases, and I grew up on all that stuff, but the last handful of years as a society have been so difficult. I was always like an avid reader of the New Yorker magazine and had a bunch of different newspaper subscriptions and stuff like that. I don't get any of that anymore.
Okay.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, regular everyday stuff is like this, everything that's going on, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. And if I am curious about a subject, I'll look up the thing. But as far as books go right now, like, I do like to read a lot of, biographies and autobiographies,
okay,
and stuff like that of all types of sorts. But I also, man, I don't want to go on your emotional journey.
Yeah, I got my own.
I always want to go on that. You
yeah.
know, I don't want to spend that time, my downtime. This is why I don't end up watching a lot of movies, even though they're the artistic and the beautiful and stuff like that. But I don't want to spend those 2 hours, like, I don't want to cry at
yeah.
the end of that. Like, I don't want to be scared.
Yeah,
I don't want to be tense in a drama. And I read those, like, spy novels and stuff like that, James Patterson books, and that's kind of, like, that's so fluffy fun, you know? That's kind of trash I'm talking about are, like, those books that are about, like, dumb widows on Nantucket making bad decisions and, you know, however, what ends up always working out for them and stuff. Beach reads. I love a beach read. But I'm reading right now, I'm just finished that book about Gucci that they made the movie about, like, the Gucci family of the story of, like, Gucci, the fashion brand. That book was long.
Oh, wow.
Let me tell you. It's like, how many more hours of this book? I didn't stop. The family history, the family story is really fascinating. Going from that level of family business into what's now a corporation with no more family ties to it, and the whole how that all happened over the course of 40 years, and it had it all. It had, like, murder and intrigue and,
oh, wow,
you know, all of that stuff. But I thought it was over, like, four different times, and I would look and see how much was left, because I read on the Kindle, and I was like, oh my God, what do you mean only 40% of this book?
Oh, jeez.
I kept from reading this book for hours. I could have been down with, like, six dumb widows by now.
Will you stop a book if you're not enjoying it, you're like, yeah, there's got to get better? Yeah,
there's got to be another book, like... I used to see things through, and then I was like, you know what? Sometimes it's just not worth my time.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not enjoying it, I'm not going to finish it. I don't care what, you know. Same thing. I'll turn off whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like, oh, this is dumb. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I'm
out. Have you ever read any Tom Robbins?
The Jitterbug perfume?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. He's one of my favorites. I always recommend him to people because I think he's just, like, not enough people know about him. Even though he's popular, but there's just not enough people, I think, that know about him. Especially
way
women.
More people should read that.
I think definitely more women should read that, too, because he writes women so great. And they're, like, the center of most of his stories and stuff. So, yeah. I'm always a Tom Robbins fan. Maybe he'll let me interview him one day.
Yes, put that out there.
Just got to send him an email. Well... You know, is there anything else that you want to let people know about what you do, what you're doing, what projects you want to work on?
Well, it's more about, you know, anyone who is listening who is behind me in age or behind me professionally, don't stop. Don't wait for permission to anything ever. It's not coming.
Yeah.
You know, and don't let anyone tell you no.
Yeah.
You know, just do the thing you want to do and don't stop until you've done it.
Yeah.
You know, life's too short and no one's going to give it to you and no one's going to give you permission. You got to just make it happen and whatever that might be. If you're able to look at a project and say, "All right, if this project's going to be accomplished, these are the things, these are the steps. This is what's going to have to go into it. Who's going to do that? Well, I don't know how to do that. Well, you better figure it out." You know, now we live in a day where you can go on the internet, learn anything you want.
Totally.
And get help. You know, or hire someone to help you. But
yeah,
just because you don't know it doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do it. And, you know, our company, I don't know, we rebranded right before COVID. And it was a very scary time in the industry all over. I mean, no touring. The labels didn't know what to do to support their artists. The small labels did great. They were the first ones out the gate with the live streaming.
Okay.
With trying to find, there was a lot more at stake for their artists because they were literally would starve.
Right.
You know, the major labels were kind of like, let's see what happens. I don't know. We can't travel now. I don't know. We don't know. But those doers, those people, you know, were able to pivot and make all this stuff happen. And it became like the Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, now it's a whole era of reinvention.
Yeah.
And now with the stuff that's happening with the AI.
Oh, man, we didn't even get into that.
It's like, it's fascinating. And I will tell you, like, I'm all about making my life easier, using it to make my life easier. But I don't want to hear a robot voice on the radio.
Right.
And I sincerely hope that people who, you know, value that community voice of their local station enough not to stand for or accept a voice that is artificial.
Right.
You know, that's not a neighbor.
Right. Do you think that songs that are written with AI should come with a disclaimer that said, yes, this was an AI written song? Because otherwise, you just took, or even physical art. Here's a painting. Here's a thing. Yeah. It's at least, if you want to say that it's a tool, then you can't be plagiarizing a tool. But it is misleading.
It's
completely misleading. Because there are people that write these songs that come from the best songwriters. It comes from somewhere deep down and true. And then there's people that just have lyrics to go with music, and it doesn't really matter, you know. But I think that if you're writing a song to any degree using AI, it should be in the credits.
I haven't even considered that one. That to me feels very much like it's no different than spam email. It's like the spamification of songwriting to do that, and I just hope that listeners won't tolerate it.
But how would they know?
They won't know. Yeah.
How would they know?
It's awful.
You know, and it's the same with like, you should have that in this article. This was written by AI. You know, this painting was done with AI. This article was done with AI. The song was written with AI. That should be a disclaimer beforehand so that you know what you're interacting with. You're not interacting with a human. You're interacting with a computer right now. You know? And so if you value interacting with other humans and consuming the art of true humans, you now have a choice. You have informed consent about what you're going to give your time, talent, and treasure on, what you're going to give your attention on, which is the most valuable thing that we have, is our attention. So what are we giving our attention to? Machines, not our fellow humans. And we should have a choice in that. We should have informed consent about that. You know, and I don't know how you go about making that case and making that a law, like it's a law to have a explicit sticker, you know, outside of the thing. Why this isn't, and you're the second writer and person in the industry that I've talked to that I've brought this up, and they're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. The very first thing that I thought of when this came out.
I've been so excited of how it's changed, like, my marketing game. Nobody likes to do that, you know, but it's so necessary, and I do a lot of it. We do artist management, too, and they all need blogs, which I write myself.
Yeah.
But the social media posts and the scheduling and the calendars and all that stuff, and I've been using it for sure because it's there, and it saves me hours and hours. I do edit everything.
Yeah.
But I would never write my own blog through it, and I don't write my artist blogs with it either, but that's just... I'm just retelling the news. It's just in another place. When I write a blog for somebody, it's just, that's a marketing structure too. I tell my artists also, like, if you feel like you want to journal, make a diary entry as a blog, put it on your site, do that for sure. But as far as we're always having to generate content.
Yeah.
We're stuck in the content loop.
Right.
I use it for sure. I used it today. And I'm fascinated by what you can do and the study of how to prompt it to get the things. I was filling out my tax return and I didn't understand like a line in it. And I asked the machine what that meant and it broke it down for me.
Would you have not been able to just Google that and not come up with an answer as well?
I Googled it first.
Okay.
And all of the answers were written in the same tax language as the question.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not like... I have pretty good reading comprehension.
Right.
But we know that's like purposefully...
confusing.
Yeah. And so I was like, write this to me as if you're explaining it to a student. And it was like, this means that. And it broke down like all the terms.
Right.
And then tied them back together into the problem.
And that's when it's a tool. And that's when it's completely, you know, that's fine. That's fine. You know, but I just like... I mean, I know somebody that there's this one specific song, and I know they wrote it with AI, because they've said, this is our song, but we wrote it with AI. But they don't say that, you know, before they play the song, and in their album, you know, and I don't even think it's the best song that they have, but still, you know, it's just like, that is so misleading. It's like plagiarizing if it were a human, but it's not a human. But it's like you just went into somebody else's journal and ripped that out.
Like, I've thought about it from the art standpoint, too, because the artist saying, well, this is your plagiarism. The machine is plagiarizing the art that already exists.
Yeah.
And so I've only considered it from that aspect. And then in radio, it's like a terrifying proposition that could be that the voice in between the songs is the computer.
Is a computer instead of a human.
That's even could, and it is learning so fast that you can say, you're talking to people in this town on a day with this weather.
Right.
You know, and you wouldn't know, wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
That I feel like we should all be a little more conscious about how much we let it into our life, how much we consent to it, you know, because it is a very slippery slope that can move really fast. And it already has, you know, since it was released just a couple of months ago. You know, the ChatGPT thing or whatever that's come out recently, you know, and now it's this, and then the AI art, I mean, just Facebook feed just filled with people doing these AI art stuff, you know, their portraits in so many different ways. And we all just jump on board because, oh, isn't it so cool to see myself in like all these different ways and I don't have to pay anybody for it. And like, ooh, that's neat and fun as we're marching off the cliff. Like, oh, isn't this a fun trip?
Right.
You know? And so I don't know, just you've got the ear of some people, and just think about, just if it ever comes up in conversation, is like, what are we as an industry doing about this? What are we thinking long range about how this is going to affect us? Like, the more that we become reliant on a piece of technology, the harder it is to get out of it. You know, our cell phone does things that like 20 different things used to do. And now we don't even go back to those things. And younger generations don't know how. Younger generations don't know how to read a face clock.
There was a TikTok the other day, and I love TikTok. I will defend that place till my death. I love that place. That is citizen journalism, that place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, it's just fantastic. But, there's this poor child on there. She was like, you know, what about if there was a phone that you just put in the house that everyone used? And then everyone at my age and up was like, this child is on here talking about landline, like inventing landlines for us.
That is the thing, you know? And it's like the more we go ahead, or further we go ahead, like we're going backwards too, and some trying to reinvent stuff that already exists that we bought this concept of this thing and it got us, you know? And, you know, we don't write letters.
I do.
I mean, I do.
I know.
You know, but like as a society, we don't write letters. And there's something different that happens when you let your hand get an idea out than when you type it out on the
100%.
Screen. There's something different that happens when, if you picked the wrong word, you have to start a new paper because you're writing in pen, you know, when you can just hit that delete button and no big deal. You know, you're not really fully processing and taking the time to think about what you want to say, you know, and to not have that instant gratification of, oh, I can see that they've read it. Oh, I can see that they're typing me back. Oh, I can see that they erased it. And, oh, what were they going to say? I mean, like, you don't have any of that. You just wait for the letter to come back in the mail to you, and you sit down and you open a thing and you touch it and it's real and it's in front of you. We're living like this experience on this third dimension is a material experience, you know, but we're like branching in to where everything's like in the ether and we can't touch it and it's not actually real.
I still print my photographs.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Because they're gone.
Right.
Otherwise,
you get your Instagram hacked, bye. Or your Facebook, bye. You know, or they decide to shut it down because they want to start something new, bye. All of that gone.
It's all gone.
And you don't journal, you know, so it's all there.
It's no scrapbook.
And boop, gone.
Gone.
Gone. You know, so all of this technology. I mean, I'm not a complete Luddite. I mean, I'm using tech for this, you know, but I do have my apprehensions on that whole AI front. Specifically as a songwriter, you know, because it'd be so easy that nobody would know. Nobody would know. And nobody knows because it's already happening.
How could you sleep at night?
How could you sleep at night? But then again,
how can these talking heads sleep at night
every night? You know?
How can you push white supremacy and
right.
sell fear to people and and sleep at night. So writing a song with the robots doesn't seem so terrible, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It's part of the same energy. It's part of the same.
It's a facade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. We definitely went all over the place. I never know where these conversations are going to go, and I love everywhere that we went. I hope that we stay in touch for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, just thanks for your time and your story.
Yeah. Thank you for coming all the way up to my home.
Thanks for letting me. This was a beautiful drive.
I'm so glad
you got to spend.
It's so good, right?
Yeah. I mean, I live off stay off Charlotte Pike while I'm here, and you just like pop over onto that river road and was like, wait a minute, where'd the city go? Yeah. Like, it's just gone ponies. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really refreshing. And it's really nice to know that somebody with the spirit that you have got to be here during the lockdown and in the city, that you got to be here and nest. You had time to nest in your home, and it's such a beautiful...
It was so exotic.
Yeah.
Really. Like, I could watch the sun move around the yard.
That's cool.
It was crazy. I didn't have to talk to anyone or go anywhere. No airport. No nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I love to travel, but holy smokes, that was just crazy. Sit at home. I just got a library card, and then I got a Kindle, and I could get all... I read 100 books that first year. We didn't have the TV. Because I'm not really... We weren't TV people either.
Yeah.
And, man, that was... A lot of terrible things happened, but there were some silver linings for sure.
Yeah. Well, just thanks for all the work that you do to keep putting good energy into the world.
Yeah. I'll try.
I think you're succeeding.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you couldn't tell, Ellie Sanders and I forged a connection on her back porch over the course of our conversation. She's not the first or the last friendship formed over this podcast journey, but her spirit is unique, all its own, and I look forward to staying connected. Her perspective on life is inspiring, and you can never have too many badass lady doers like her in your vortex. Thank you for being here to listen to episode 10 with Ellie Sanders on the Doers of Things. I just want to remind you of the value for value model this listening experience runs on. My current pledge to you is to never have sponsorship ads or corporate commercials. I also have no plans on creating tiered content or a subscription fee that prices people out of the experience of hearing their fellow humans share their stories. All content is for all people all the time. I can do that with your help as a producer of the show via your time, talent, and treasure. So if you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a producer to whatever level you can. Head on over to thedoersofthings.com in the donate tab to learn more about how you can jump on board. Until the next time you tune in to The Doers of Things, I'm Mary Brett saying, don't wait for permission. Just do the thing you want to do.